As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 6 of the... No, this is not More Than Just Code. How do we start this one?
It's like, welcome to this podcast.
Okay, got it. Welcome to Spotcast, Season 6, Episode 20. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And there's no Jonathan today, which means it'll be a really short show, eh? What do you think, Jaime?
It's a two-person show, twice in a row.
It's the original format. Yeah. We've gone back to the original format. Yeah, Jonathan's traveling for business today, so last week was my turn, this week is his turn. Alrighty. So, a couple of fact check things to start off the show. Writer, creator of The Crowded House. I don't know if you've seen The Crowded House on, I think it's on Apple TV. It's about a split personality dude, as far as Tom Holland of Superman or Spider-Man fame. What's interesting about this is you know, how we talked about the AI introduction of Secret Invasion. Mm-hmm. I think that the opening scene or the opening title scene of Crowded House also looks like it's very similar format. So I wonder if it's also AI generated, because it's got that same sort of illustrator feel, right?
Okay.
I couldn't find anything about it.
Yeah, I can understand that though. There's definitely a lot of stuff that I've seen online nowadays that certainly has that sort of sheen or shimmer to it. That feels like, oh yeah, that feels like what the AI stuff is creating nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. It's obviously got a tell, right? Anyway, so the reason I brought up The Crowded House is it's written by writer-creator Kiva Goldsman. He's actually in the last episode as a sort of a, like a, what do you call it, when the director does a cameo, I guess. But he also created Strange New Worlds, which we never really talk about. But he's also known for and wrote A Beautiful Mind, and he wrote many parts of Picard, and he also wrote Batman and Robin, which proves that nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought it was an interesting connection between that person and this particular show, which we seem to be focusing on these days, right? And then fact check on the fact check. Last time I left you guys a note saying that Jaime is on the right channel, Tim's on the left, which is weird because I think I always thought it was backwards in the mix in Logic Pro. And I did mention two episodes ago that Jonathan is in the middle. He's in the center. And on More Than Just Code, Mark is in the center, so... And you guys were talking about this V liquid thing that you weren't sure if it was called V or something else, but surely V stands for void. But I was throwing
for void because the Gen V, because like Vought, compound V is the liquid that makes you super. So void, yeah, okay.
Void, whatever. Yeah.
Here's a fact check here. I think it might be spelled like John Voight's name, but I think they pronounce it in show as Vought.
Okay.
But I'd have to look because I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. Now, is John Voight still with us? Did he recently pass away? Let's go quick
good question
on that. That's, he played Laura Croft's father in the first Laura Croft movie. And he was also in that Mission Impossible, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
John Boyd. Yeah, he's what's her name's father, right?
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie. Yeah, he's actually her father, which is interesting that he played, you know, Lara Croft's estranged father in that series, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, he's still around, so I was wrong about that. And a friend of the show, Keen, who works with me, hey, Keen, he pointed out that I said Yoshi on Star Trek Enterprise, or on the show Enterprise, and it's actually Hoshi Sato. And he said that Hoshi means star in Japanese. So I was talking about the episode where they couldn't see Hoshi, right?
Yeah, and wow, I was there and I completely whiffed on here. I could have sworn that you said Hoshi. So
I don't know.
I guess I've like my brain auto corrected it because I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Well, as I've pointed out on this show many, many times, I tend to mispronounce things all the time. And sometimes I say left when I mean right. And sometimes I'll say 10,000 when I mean a million, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I I've been calling Han Solo Han Solo instead of Han Solo, right? And I notice I should point out to Keen that he says Java the same way that I say Java, as in JavaScript. And you guys say Java, right? Which I always used to get trouble with you guys on the show on right. Reverend Just Code. All righty, so let's move on to the headlines. We can fight over this one. I guess I'll talk about it because it's Canadian, and it's actually been on the news, actually, since Jonathan posted this story, but Paramount Plus is taking back all things Star Trek, and so apparently Crave is our sort of equivalent of HBO Max. It's been showing all of the Star Trek titles. I think it's like 800 various episodes of between all the TV shows and the movies. They're all being taken away off of the Canadian streaming service Crave and going to Paramount Plus. And that's happening fairly quickly. I think he's got September 9th. So it's almost like this week. No, next month, I guess, right? But I did also hear on the news when they mentioned it today that they also dropped the fact that Paramount Plus and Peacock, no, not Peacock, Pluto TV are the same thing. Remember, I was kind of wondering whether they were kind of connected, because a lot of times I see ads for Paramount Plus on Pluto TV.
Mm-hmm.
So they are somehow connected. But that said, our Space Channel, CTV sci-fi channel, which used to be called Space, is going to continue to show on regular cable the various shows, as far as I know. I mean, that's, you know, I flipped on the TV today to make sure that, in fact, Strange New Worlds was still playing just before we started recording the show, right? So, all right. Anyway, so that's the story about Crave. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I guess if you haven't watched all the episodes of Star Trek that you want to watch, you better pitter-patter, get at her. Mind you, I should say that the Space Channel, Sci-Fi Channel, is still showing. Monday, they show the original series. Tuesday, they show The Next Generation. Thursday, I think they show Voyager. And I think they do run all of the shows. I'm not sure if they played Deep Space Nine, but what else is there on the regular syndicated stuff? Like, you can catch Lower Decks there too. They replay the Lower Decks as, you know, as filler because it's only half an hour long, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Anyway,
yeah. So the end of socialized sci-fi for Star Trek, at least, right? In Canada?
Yeah, I mean, we call it socialized sci-fi, but I still pay probably $120 Canadian a month for cable TV. So it's not like it's free, but...
It's not free, but it was included in stuff that you already had. So,
yeah.
You know, you didn't even choose... Like, if you're not a Star Trek fan, you, like, didn't even choose to have access to it, but you did.
Yeah. If I could find a streaming service that had the Smithsonian Channel on it, I could get, you know, Carol's almost ready to drop cable here, because pretty much she watches a lot of she watches that show Time Team, but she's been watching it on YouTube lately. But yeah, she tends to like the science-y sort of shows, archaeology and that kind of stuff. And so if I could find that in a streaming service, I could drop Rogers cable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's funny because I have a 4K they call it Next Box, right, which is the next gen, it's actually the previous generation of set top box, I guess you call it. It's got the ability to record, but I very rarely record any shows these days. Like, you know, I think Bupkis was the last thing I recorded, the Pete Davidson show, but I do have it set to when these things come back to automatically, you know, it's set to record them, but I've not really been using it at all. I've been spending all my time on Apple TV or Crave or, you know, Disney. So I think the cable is pretty much dead. And actually, I think we talked about, did we talk about Stack TV a couple of weeks ago? It's a property owned by Amazon. They show the regular cable shows that you normally would see on, like, I think they have 16 channels or something that are traditional TV channels. So are you missing any channels that you used to watch on cable or would have watched on cable?
It's mostly the sports stuff that has stuck over.
Oh, the sports, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't watch sports. I mean, to be honest with you, I'll flip on the Canadian or the NHL when I'm, you know, doing other things. But, like, it's to me, it's Paw Patrol, right? It's just on in the background.
Right.
I mean, occasionally I'll watch a sports event if it's on, but like a F1 or something. But, yeah, I don't watch baseball. I don't watch basketball. I don't need sports TV, personally.
Yeah, so, you know, as we record here, both the writers and the actors are still on strike, and there's starting to be repercussions for release dates. So Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse, the sequel series in the Into the Spider-Verse series, is indefinitely delayed. So it had been previously planned for March 2024, but it's now doesn't have a date, and, you know, a lot of that stuff is going to start to shift. I think I'd heard that Ghostbusters, just like it mentions here in this article, has been moved, Kraven the Hunter, and a bunch of other things. So I think you'll start to see folks at the studio start to delay some things that haven't been fully baked, you know, if they need to do re-edits, reshoots, and etc. And I think we'll start to see things get stretched out so that it's not as obvious that there's this big gap in schedules for things.
Yeah, and on that same note, as a result of the strikes as well, the Emmys have been postponed as the WGA and SAG-AFTRA, the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA are on strike. So that was announced that there's going to be no show. But it's interesting, you know, it's sort of a side note. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I went to my niece's baby shower on the weekend, right? And one of her friends that she went to high school with, I didn't even realize this, is she's a Canadian actress. Her name is Alex Paxton Beasley. And she was, I don't know if you remember, I told you about a show called Cardinal that I watched, I really liked. Anyway, mm-hmm. she was an actress in that, and she played a woman who gets shot, gets a bullet lodged in her brain and forgets who she is. And she's in, like pivotal in season two. Didn't even put two and two together that this is the same person. Obviously I knew her when she was a, you know, high school kid and, or, you know, just, yeah, I hadn't seen her in 10 years or whatever, but she had mentioned that, the Canadian actors are going to attend TIFF, which is a Toronto International Film Festival coming up in September. But I had also heard, I think I mentioned last week or last time I was on the show that, I mean, the fact is that the Americans are not going to be coming, and that, you know, other than, you know, international actors who are coming from, you know, Europe and that kind of stuff who will probably come over. But the, one of the big draws of the red carpet and the premieres of all the movies is at these film festivals is the American actors, you know, being there to walk the red carpet, mm-hmm. do interviews and that kind of stuff. And that's not going to happen, right? So, but the Canadians will be there. So I didn't actually get a chance to follow up with her, but I just overheard her saying that where they were talking about the Canadian actors going to be going to TIFF. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At this point, anyway. But, and Jonathan's pointed out here that the comic creators are joining the picket lines as well. This is a story in the Hollywood Reporter. If you picked up anything from this one?
Not specifically. Like it's worth pointing out that they're also concerned about AI for art and writing. So, although it's not something we've talked about specifically, you could imagine that if you're concerned about that happening for motion pictures, then, you know, comic book pictures would be something that would be a natural thing to suffer as well. So,
well, even comic book art, I mean, like yeah, they're talking about here with this the Comic Con, and they've got a list of writers and who you and I really can't, or I can't talk about, but I mean, because I don't really know them for context, but. There's also a threat to, you know, how are companies going to be making, you know, the comic book magazines, graphic novels and stuff, if, you know, AI becomes a way to do that, right?
Not allowed to say here. It's not really my my area, but I can definitely understand that those folks want to make sure that they're, you know, taken care of and paid appropriately for the work that they produce. Certainly, a lot of this show is talking about characters that, you know, very iconic, worth a ton of money, but not necessarily putting a lot of, you know, pocket change into the creators' pockets.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've talked about Smartless, the podcast with Sean Hayes and Jason Bateman and Canadian actor, I can't remember his name now, Will Barnett. They do a show called Smartless, and they had Steven Soderbergh on, and it'll come up later on in my pick. But he said, "What the thing about AI?" He says AI hasn't experienced anything, right? He says it's an iterative tool, so it's not like his point is that it's basically just making derivative stuff, and derivative stuff doesn't really sell tickets. You know, like people can kind of see through that, right? You know.
Yeah, I think the bread and butter for AI will be giving you the 20th edition of insert franchise here, but not necessarily creating the next new thing that we're really excited about.
Yeah, so super sad news. Nobody really knew this. It was kind of kept private, but apparently Paul Rubens, also known as Pee-wee Herman, and the Spleen, has died at the age of 70. He had a battle with cancer, and apparently succumbed to that just recently. Interesting, he had an interesting career. I mean, you probably grew up on Pee-wee's Playhouse and the movie, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And right in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I used to watch it with my kids, and so it was kind of interesting. And, you know, like people like Lawrence Fishburne as what was his name? Cowboy something or other?
Cowboy Curtis?
Cowboy Curtis, yeah. And the chairs that hugged you and stuff like the cherry and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was really wacky, and he had he did fall out of favor because it was, you know, one of these sort of scandal-y things. It wasn't as bad as some of the later ones we've had recently, but it was still enough to get him off of, you know, your children's view, as it were. But I think, his portrayal of the Spleen in Mystery Men is probably one of the best. You know, I really love that portrayal there, right? You've seen Mystery Men, Tommy?
Yes.
Yeah. Great movie. Yeah, so pour one out for Paul Rubens.
Yeah, that Pee-wee's Playhouse was a trip. I always liked the Conky 2000 robot that was made out of like a boombox and other assorted stuff.
Did you watch it when you were a kid, or?
Yeah, you know, it was there during the formative years of my life as an '80s kid. Right. So we have a new trailer for season 2 of Loki streaming October 6th. And I don't know if this is going to be a trend, but clearly Kihi Kwan is like writing the Rolodex under multiverse as a thing, because he's right here in the beginning of this trailer. So good for him to get a lot of work. What did you think of this trailer?
Oh, that was interesting. It's funny though, when I see things like, no offense to him, but when I see people like him being like toted, you know, trotted out, it's kind of like he's almost, is he the flavor of the week, you know, kind of thing. Like, you know, I don't mean in disrespect to him as an actor, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. But it was interesting. I interesting premise with Loki losing control over his, you know, his ability to move around from one timeline to another. And I think we saw who's the dude from Quantumania, the big bad? Because he shows up
Kang,
in there too.
Yeah, right? We see like old timey Kang, presumably. Looks like he's, I don't know, late 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah, and it ends with his face on the screen. I think, you know, as sort of maybe the big pivotal bad guy, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I mean, and they brought back the female version of Loki as well, right? She's in there in the middle of the trailer as well.
Yeah, Sylvie, I think was her.
Sylvie, yeah,
was her given name as the female Loki.
Oh, looks good. Daniel Glover and his brother doing a Lando series, Disney series. What did you read this one?
briefly, it just doesn't have a lot in it, and I have honestly no clue. Stephen Glover doesn't ring a bell necessarily, but you know, we've certainly seen family members do things, team up, the Coens and Wachowskis and stuff. So, you know, maybe there's something to that. I don't know, back and forth repartee with somebody you you grew up with. So gives you somebody to sort of feed off of your energy, but also kind of keep it real of like, oh, man, that's dumb. It's just like when you did blah, blah, blah as a kid, you know, like they call you out on your stuff. So we've seen some of the Atlanta series and I've enjoyed that. We'll see what kind of energy gets brought into a Lando series.
Were they both involved in Amazon or in Atlanta or just Donald Glover? That was his show, right?
Yeah, it was his show, so I know he was definitely. And I'm not sure what, having not seen most of Atlanta, I'm not really sure what role his brother played.
Huh. Actually, what does it say here? It says Justin Seaman has exited Disney Plus project, which has Donald Glover attached to reprise a role of from Solo, right? I'm not sure if that's the story. Jonathan would know, never bury the story or, yeah, bury the lead.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of those weird things where Star Wars stuff just tends to lose directors and writers. Yeah. So I'm kind of not surprised. I don't know. It's probably pretty, pretty contentious, pretty political for that sort of property.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, you can read the article yourself. There's some interesting comments in there by the man who I don't know, so I'm not going to go into it. All right.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which came out as of this recording just yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. You know, we've talked about the premise. It's a, so it's a 3D animated feature with kind of vaguely inspired by the Into the Spider-Verse kind of style. You know, the animation is just a little off, and it gives you that sort of flavor, different sort of style. And this takes place seemingly in some of the earliest we've seen the four turtles as actual crime-fighting squad. So they're like not late teenagers, they're more like barely teenagers. And apparently this has been doing well enough leading up to the release. There's enough buzz that it's got a sequel and spinoff series planned. So they're putting them all, the Paramount's putting in all the poker chips on this one.
So for those of us who don't know the actual turtles themselves, I know they're named after famous Renaissance painters, but how do I know, is Donatello the one with the red mask? And
okay. So the leader of the group with the katanas and the blue mask is Leonardo. The brother that fights with him a lot in terms of wanting to do his own thing and it just kind of, you know, goes to a different drummer in the red mask with the size is Raphael. And then you have the, you know, smart scientist stereotype turtle is Donatello with the bow and the purple mask, and rounding things out is the fun-loving California surfer dude one with the nunchucks and orange mask named Michelangelo.
Yeah, which is really interesting because that's completely opposite to the actual artists themselves, because Leonardo was sort of the sort of typical Renaissance man. He did everything science and art and sculpture. Michelangelo was a sculptor, right? Raphael was also, Raphael? Donatello was definitely a sculptor, only a sculptor, and Raphael was a painter. And Raphael was the younger of that sort of triad of artists in real history. But interesting. Interesting that they kind of like mixed up. I mean, the names are cool, I guess. They decided to go with that. But I wonder what the original author's intention was.
Yeah.
Just to use the name.
I know they've, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird have talked a lot about some of the history and jokiness that went into the creation of the Turtles. I don't know if the selection of the names and assignment of the names more specifically is part of the joke to sort of get at the folks who have a BFA, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or have studied Renaissance history. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it could be just a, hey, this one seems cool for this one versus like, oh, this is really going to anger the people who know the artists, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you remember when you and I did that talk. I had the, or I think I did a talk at 360 iDev on the connection between developing and art, like engineering applications and art. And I had the four artists. I had the four, you know, Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo, and Raphael. And then I, in the next slide, it transitioned to them with Ninja Turtle masks on.
Oh, right. I've seen the slides. Yeah.
All right. I can't remember how maybe I stole that from somebody else. I can't remember. But anyway, so disappointing news for me, Disenchantment, which I really enjoy, it will come to an end with season 5 coming out in September on the Netflix, which is disappointing. But yeah, I really enjoy that show. It's a lot of fun, but I don't know if they really can go any further with it, to be honest with you. But yeah, I guess hopefully they're going to wrap up some of the stories, some of the storylines, right?
Yeah, I think it kind of makes sense for it to end here in this 5th season, just because it's seemingly had a pretty strong arc. It's not a forever show like a Simpsons, even though it does seem to have a lot of episodic sort of elements. There actually are little, you know, breadcrumbs sprinkled through each episode, and then, you know, towards the end of a season is where it really picks up, like, oh, here's the big bad, here's how they're going to try to resolve things, and then normally leave you with a cliffhanger. I'd expect this to get wrapped up in this season with maybe a little teaser in case they want to come back for a sequel or spinoff or something.
Right. Yeah. Cool. And I just posted this yesterday. And I put it's got this, you know, the title says Star Wars merchandise seemingly leaks beloved characters return in Ahsoka. But I'm like, is this really a leak, or is this just, as we like to say on the other show, clickbaity? Because did we not know that, of course, Anakin's going to come back? Of course, Hera's going to come back. I mean, they're in the trailer, right? So apparently Amazon leaked some toys a couple of days ago, and that's how the universe has found out, you know, about these characters coming out. But did we not think that Anakin would come back in the Ahsoka show? Because it wasn't Anakin, and, well, she was his apprentice, right?
Yeah, I was a little confused by the way this was constructed, because it says characters with an apostrophe S, singular character, apostrophe S.
Yeah. Yeah.
So looking at the, you know, Ahsoka, it's like, well, I mean, her name is in the title, so I don't think they mean her.
Sabine, she's the beloved character, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it's like Sabine Wren. I'm like, all right, I mean, she was clearly in the first trailer. Yeah. Anakin Skywalker is probably the closest, because I don't think we've explicitly seen him in the trailer, but, you know, given Hayden Christensen's return to the character in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series,
yeah,
it's probably a pretty good one. And I will admit that probably a mere 12 months ago, I would have just like chuckled at the Mon Mothma coming back. But actually, since Andor, I'm like, whoa, this character is way more interesting. Like, give me more Mon Mothma on this. So, beloved characters return, I'm guessing, is Anakin. And it makes sense, if nothing else, at least as a flashback, right? Thinking about her time with her master.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Like that Mon Moth, the actress who plays Mon Mothma in Rebels, and I think in I'm sure Jonathan will throw something at the phone, but is the same person who plays Mon Mothma in Andor. Yeah. So Andor.
Yeah, it's an A for the character's name. It's an E for the
For the planet. Yeah. The moon on Endor,
isn't it? The forest moon of Endor.
Yeah, it's not actually Endor. Yeah. The forest moon. All right. Well, I guess we'll move on to our main reason to be why we're here, and that is to talk about Star Trek. And this was the long-awaited, what are they calling it? Was it called, actually, Space Rhapsody? Was it called?
Yes, it was called Subspace Rhapsody.
Subspace Rhapsody, yeah. And I guess that's because it goes viral. In a sense, too. It's funny, you know, I there are a lot of musicals that I like. I mean, I like, you know, some like It Hot. I like, you know, I've seen Spamalot. I've seen my share of musicals. But generally speaking, I don't like modern musicals. And I found this episode to be really trying, you know. I did, you know, once you get the sort of E-worm, I mean, even Uhuru says at the end of it, there's like kind of an E-worm that builds up. But actually, and so I don't really have a pitch for this because I really had a hard time. Like, I felt like Spock in this episode, you know, like not wanting to break into song, but feeling forced to break into song at some point, you know, kind of thing. It was really well. I mean, I gotta say, I was really impressed with the performances. Each person who sang, I mean, Una, what's her real name now? Like Christina Chong, I do have a note here that she actually just came out with, I think, an album. But I found a link to a song called "Can't Show Love." I follow her on Twitter, and she's been, or yeah, let's call it Twitter for today. we're gonna call it Twitter from now on. Let's make a moratorium right now. I don't care what letter of the alphabet you want to call it. We're calling it Twitter on this show. Anyway, I follow her on Twitter. Actually, Spotcast follows her on Twitter, and she's been pointing out she just came out with like her debut album kind of thing, like about a month ago. So it's kind of interesting that she did really well in the singing. Why am I drawing a blank on Una's name?
Do you mean the actress's name? Yeah. Rebecca Romijn.
Yeah, she did. And each one, like Christina, Nurse Chapel, sang differently. Uhura obviously sings differently. But they each sort of, they fit together like they have a musical dialogue sort of thing. Like I found Una sung a lot, almost like a Julie Andrews, Anne Hathaway kind of voice, you know? The hardest one I had was Anson Mount's voice. He was very sort of, he didn't sing as much, right? But mm-hmm. but his, I think he has a baritone voice, right? And Spock, actually, the actor who sings Spock's part was really good. Very sort of like what you would expect from, you know, actors who have done stage work on Broadway or whatever, what have you, right? So, because I mean, yeah. Most actors who study go through that as part of their process, right? What did you think about this episode?
I think it was fun. You know, you've got the basic premise of, for my elevator pitch, I said the one with singing, and it's set up by like, you know, weird space anomaly does weird space anomaly thing. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it sends a crew back to like, you know, the Paramount Western stage lot, and sometimes it's, you know, turns it into a musical. So definitely fit with the sort of fun campiness that you would get out of original series era Star Trek. But still had some danger to it of like the repercussions if this thing goes awry, and the sort of countdown for the Klingons showing up, because they're also experiencing the same problem. They're also really angry about it.
Right. So have you ever seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Yes.
Yeah, so I just watched it. I just finished watching it yesterday. I started watching it on Disney when it came to Disney. I watched half of it, and I just finished watching it yesterday. I've seen that particular movie 1,000 times. I remember when it came out, I wanted to go see it. And I saw it in the theaters before it became the event, you know, where you'd throw the toast at the screen and spill the wine and all that kind of stuff and yell out. It was just at the very beginnings of those, back in like 77, I guess. Mm-hmm. It came out in 75. But the one pinnacle part of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and I found that the solution to today's show was almost identical in parallel, was it's time for the floor show, right? Which was like the sort of, the story goes to a certain point, and then they just, you know, they go over the top. They have the RKO, you know, symbol come out, and they, you know, they do the big number, right? And that was the solution to this particular, you know, subspace anomaly that's infecting all of, you know, the entire Starfleet fleet and the Klingons, right? So there was some really, really interesting stuff. So that would be my pitch. It's time for the floor show, right? yeah, it was interesting because it was a lot of little, I mean, if you look at what they said, I mean, it was hard to sort of get quotes out of this one other than, I did get a few, but I think because most of it was just them doing musical dialogue. It's interesting how everything has to rhyme, you know, every sentence or every second sentence has to rhyme to sort of keep the cadence going in that particular style. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to pull out stuff, but I did pick out, I think some of them were like almost like the lines that repeat in the show. So in terms of what they said, "This is a private conversation" was the one that Pike and his girlfriend Patel say to each other. And luckily, the security chief, you know, closes the comm before he exposes himself in front of the whole crew. One thing that Una said was that she talked about, I forgot which captain she said had just reached out to him with a surprisingly beautiful baritone. You know, he let me know with a surprisingly beautiful baritone is what she says.
Yeah.
And the other one, the one I laughed at was as soon as I saw the Klingons on the map, I was thinking the same thing. And then Una says, the last thing anyone needs is singing Klingons.
They ended up in, I don't know, like a Backstreet Boys BTS yeah. sort of one. And I thought for sure it was going to be like Klingon opera is where I thought they were going to.
Oh, that would have made more sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it still worked as a funny moment, but that was one where I think they took a different turn than I'd expected.
I love the fact that they were all dancing in unison behind the captain, right? On the Klingon ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he did that sort of rappy. He sort of kicked into a higher, you know, more tenor voice, more and doing the rapper-esque kind of thing, right? Do you have any quotes he pulled out?
The one that they repeated early when they were first figuring out was "Apologies, the most confounding thing we appear to be singing," which I'm not able to sing in the correct sort of tone, but that was something that was happening when they were like confused as to what was going on.
I was
going to
say, should we be singing in this episode? I wasn't sure if you wanted to go there or not. Well, it's interesting because I watched the trailer after the show was over. They played one of the Easter eggs we got to talk about is the Alexander Courage theme. They played the entire thing at the end as sort of like the final, you know, denouement musical moment. But in the title, the outro titles, they sort of like, you know, in musicals, if you go see a musical, they often have like an overture where they play the themes that are going to be sung during the show. And they did that at the end. And so I had the closed captioning on. So they played a little bit of one of the songs is called "I'm Ready." The second one is "A Private Conversation," which is the Pike and Patel one. And then "Connect Your Truth" is the one that Una and Kirk sing, right, in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I thought she was saying "Connect to Your Troops" or "Connect to your." And she said something different, but apparently the song is called "Connect to Your Truth." That was kind of cool. Did you have any other musical bits?
You sort of already hit this one, but I did write as one of the Easter egg ones that Law and actress Christina Chong is actually a singer in real life.
Yeah.
And once again, the skip intro button is something I would avoid. It's irresponsible of Paramount Plus to not delay this because you have the a cappella chorus version of the Strange New Worlds opening.
So. Oh, I didn't. I skipped it. I should have listened to it.
It's fun. Just like, you know, I accidentally skipped the Lower Decks flavor one and had to go back
A
filthy animal. This time I was ready. I was like, let me see if they're going to do anything weird. And sure enough, it's an a cappella chorus version of the intro. Same imagery of everything of like normal is just a cappella. So it's not animated like the Lower Decks one.
I have to go back and watch it now. Yeah. So it was the same theme, but was he singing or was it just
it's like having a, you know, a musical group like a Broadway musical singing ba, ba,
ba, ba, oh really ba, it wasn't yeah. It wasn't the instrumentation. Oh, I gotcha.
No, so that's why I might be using the term wrong in my not a musician.
No, you got it right. It's acapella chorus. Acapella with there's no musical accompaniment. Yeah there was like there was a band called the Nylons. I don't know if you ever heard them, but there was a bunch of acts in the 80s and 90s where they sung instead of playing instruments, right? Cool. And then for Easter eggs, I've got a couple. I had my favorite one is the Heisenberg compensator. It's one of my favorite all-time Star Trek technologies. Do you know the purpose of the Heisenberg compensator?
I know it's to deal with the uncertainty principle. Is it with transporters? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, in order, like the thing about it is in order to. And this goes back to the original series. And actually, I think they probably talked more about it in Next Generation. But in order to know where every atom and electron that makes up Jaime Lopez Jr. is, they need to be able to measure the position of each one, break you down into your parts, beam you over to a new location, and then reassemble you in exactly the same format that they just read you, right? But Heisenberg, he had this thing that's saying just by putting an instrument in position to measure the electrons orbiting the neutrons and protons would influence them, and therefore you could never really know the full position of an electron as it orbited an atom, right? Or an element or compound. And so the scientists in Star Trek, they wrote in the Heisenberg compensators as a technology that would correct for the fact that they were influencing the electrons by measuring them.
Right.
And it's also kind of an Easter egg, too, because you guys talked about Oppenheimer last week, right? Heisenberg was famously on Team Nazi in the Americans versus the non-Aryan race scientists who built the bomb on the Allied side, right? Versus the ones who worked for Hitler, right? Now, I'm not going to spoil it before. Did Jonathan spoil it last week? I can't remember. He didn't tell you anything about the reason why. One of the things that Oppenheimer says is why the Nazis will never beat the Americans.
No, I don't think he talked about that.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But all right. And then the other Easter egg obviously was that Kirk is dating Carol, and mm-hmm. she's pregnant.
Yeah, Carol Marcus.
Yeah, with David Marcus, who becomes his son and ultimately rescues Spock, resurrects Spock. But yeah, with the Genesis device, right? But I think in because Kirk doesn't know that. In the movies, you know, the William Shatner Kirk doesn't know that she's pregnant or that she had a son, because he discovers that in the is it Wrath of Khan? I guess it's Wrath of Khan, right?
I was a little wondering about that too, where I know that Dr. Marcus, she had said to Kirk that, like, it was better to raise the boy alone away from the father that, you know, is zipping around space all the time, isn't really providing a stable father figure, but I could not remember whether it was actually a surprise to Kirk that he existed. Like,
yeah,
like
no,
this
it was,
one seems
it was.
To present the idea that, like, oh, I'm aware, but, like, we're just going to be separate because I got to do my space thing.
I'm going to be a deadbeat. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, because that's the thing is, like he knew he dated Carol Marcus, right? Because I remember he says to McCoy, I have a son. He's my son, you know, kind of thing. Which is kind of, you know, that's a line that's always bothered me from The Wrath of Khan is like, if you had a son and you didn't know that you had a son for like 20 years, right? Would you have this overwhelming sense of emotion and attachment to this person who, for all intents and purposes, other than doting a little bit of protein, you really don't know that person, right?
Having not been in that situation, I'm inclined to think that it would be like meeting a stranger and more of a trivia oddity kind of thing than it would be an emotional thing. Although that's under normal circumstances, right? I think in the Kirk character arc, he was encountering feelings of, you know, age and legacy and
right,
other things
right.
that I think this plays into the, honestly, very similar things that Picard runs into, certainly in the Star Trek Picard season 3, but I think more, I should say earlier in Star Trek Generations in the Nexus, where Picard doesn't have a family, but in the Nexus fantasy, he has, oh, papa, you know, just normal Victorian Christmas kind of thing going on. So, I think that was being played with a bit, so I think I can give it a pass. But I think in normal circumstances, if you weren't, you know, thinking about what you leave behind, then you probably are like, oh, whoa, have a son, okay. Well, good thing we're in a, you know, in a utopian society, we're out of to pay child support.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing I noticed too was that near the end of the episode, Uhura actually pulls out an old school tricorder, which I don't think we've really seen very often. I mean, every time they went on an away mission in the original series, they would pull out the tricorder, right? But yeah, this is the first time we've actually seen one. And she held up the little sort of the cigarette lighter from the car that, you know, that they used mm-hmm. to read mm-hmm. whatever that is, you know, that Dr. McCoy used to use. She had one of those in her hand too. So I don't know what that thing's called, but.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
more fact check, right?
Yeah. What did you have for your pew pew pew? Because I had the big finale for mine, including, I guess, you know, the sort of explosion stuff that happens and the pirouetting Enterprise and Klingon cruisers.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it really didn't have a pew pew or a pew pew pew. I always sort of pick a non-violent pew 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 when I do one, right? Mm-hmm. Like usually it's two people going toe to toe or head to head, right? But yeah, I don't know. I don't think I had one this one. You're right, but that sort of explosion at the end, I guess that was the with the little fireflies all over the place, right? Once the anomaly gets blown up.
Mm-hmm. And did you have big questions?
Oh, man, just talked about Kirk one.
right.
How about you? Do you have a big question?
I had mine in that will Pike tell his lover, Captain Patel, that this can't go on forever? Like, at what point does it become a, like, hey, you may not want to invest in Team Pike here for too long. You're trying to make it more serious, but, like, let me tell you, I might not be around for so long, you know? Like, he doesn't know how he will ultimately end up, but he knows that he's gonna have the part he knows so far is like, yeah, I don't think she's gonna want to go through that, you know.
Yeah, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I always thought that Una and La'an had a vibe last year, like in the first season, right?
Yeah, I think they did play a bit of that.
So I kind of you know, seeing Christina Chong and you know, get all sort of, it was funny, sort of the high school kind of, you know, she walks the wrong way off the transporter pad and that kind of stuff. I mean, that was fun the way they did that. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought they had that sort of, you know, hey, you know, I guess the alignment of couples isn't, you know, as hardly defined as it say was in the 70s or 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's funny, like I kind of, you know, they play with the feels with Christina and Nurse Chapel and Spock, right? And it's kind of getting to the point where I think maybe that's where they're setting up the, because I talked about the prequel problem before, because if you watch the original series, Nurse Chapel always looks longingly at Spock, who's completely oblivious to her, right? You know, and it's obvious to McCoy that Christina Chapel is, you know, interested in Spock, even though Spock has, you know, no outward emotion towards her. Mm-hmm. And the scene where Chapel is, you know, kind of celebrating with Ortega and the other people about having got this assignment, and the way that Spock walks away from her at the end, you know, you get Christina Chapel looking at Spock the way that the original series Christina would have looked at him, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's always sort of a big question for me is this their relationship, like, isn't he engaged to somebody now? And you know,
yeah, they got to get the pieces in place for him to, you know, have the engagement stuff where amok time is going to happen. You're going to have to have,
yeah, Ponfar and all that stuff. Yeah,
I think with Spock's character, I can see how they can write themselves into where they need them to be. So Spock is this season intentionally being more emotional and experimenting with emotions. And I could see him deciding that this experience with Nurse Chapel, he's going to dedicate himself to logic much more strongly, which would give him a, you know, a nice excuse to cut her off and be where he ends up being. And if they even want a hint, he may even say, you know, Captain, I've decided to go all in on logic. And I may even eventually take the Kolinar, to purge myself of that, to sort of hint at where he ends up in Star Trek, the motion picture, right? With the Kolinar ceremony. I forget what it's called. Process.
Protocol. I don't know. The Kolinar. It's just called the Kolinar. Yeah. Just so no.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Cool. So all around it, interesting episode. I wonder, like I was saying at the top of the show, that sometimes these kind of efforts to, I mean, like, you ever watched a Drew Carey show?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember there was one episode where they broke it, or they used to have a sing song at the very beginning, or they had one, at least one episode where they broke into song, right?
Yeah.
That reminded me of this today.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm a little unclear on where things are with episodes, so I suspect that on this show we have not collectively talked about Strange New World Season 2, Episode 8, Under the Cloak of War.
Oh, yeah.
Because with the weird release schedule of what, you know, Paramount Plus did, at least, we got the surprise episode with Strange New Worlds in Lower Decks. Jonathan and I went two-man team on that one. You and I are going two-man team on the episode that came out today, the other weird episode of the Rhapsody. But I think under the covers, what happened in between was Season 2, Episode 8. Do we want to quickly go through that one as the sort of left-behind episode?
Yeah, it was an interesting episode. I think it was trying to do the reveal of the history between Nurse Chapel and Mbenga, and where they get their what was the name of the V liquid stuff, Formula V or whatever,
the compound V. Yeah. Compound Except theirs is the competitive brand. It's green, right? The green juice.
Yes. Yeah. It was interesting. It was kind of dark for this show. I mean they did that last year with the what were the things that attacked
the Gorn, probably, is what
the Gorn. Yeah, Under the Cloak of War. Yeah, just trying to remember what the Easter eggy bits were on that one.
Well, for Strange New World Season 2, Episode 8, Under the Cloak of War, what I wrote for the elevator pitch leading there was more of a like a B-movie title of Race War, Injustice, as a subtitle. Because it's, you know, showing the sort of, you know, depths of the Federation-Klingon War that we saw covered in Discovery. So from my best pew-pew-pew, they had the Terminator 2-ish background going on, you know, that like got like the medical tents.
Yes.
But the, you know, you could have, you know, photoshopped in, like, John Connor from the future sort of thing, and it would fit that sort of very dark, moody, guns ablazing kind of thing going on.
Yeah, and it's an origin story for the Christina Chapel gets sent down to be a nurse in this sort of MASH tent kind of thing, right? This, you know, triage the instead of the helicopters, they get transported in, right? And she lands there and she says, "Where's the head nurse?" And they go, "Congratulations, you're the head nurse now." And then for the ultimate Easter egg, the person who tells her that is in fact Clint Howard, right?
That was my Easter egg as well. Yeah. How many times can he be in a Star Trek series? Because he goes way back, way further than anyone would think.
Yeah, he's, I think I've talked about him before, because I think he was in one of the first episodes of the series, right? Let me pull it up here on the device. Yeah, because he plays the little alien is it Corbett Maneuver? Tholian Web, I think it's called Tholian Web. Yeah, cause he plays the little alien that has the drink with the captains, or Captain Spock and McCoy at the end of it, right? Yeah, it was
Corbett Maneuver, is what I think it was probably.
Yeah, Corbett, and he plays the little. He plays Balok, and he was like six or something, right? When he played that role. Yeah, that was the 10th episode of the first season. Back in, when was that? So how many years ago was that? This is 1966.
Hmm.
Almost 40 years or 50 years, right?
It would be more because. Oh wait. Yeah, no, it would be more, because if you went, you know,
57 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, if you went from 70 to 20, you would have hit your 50 right there. So then add three, add the four, going the other directions.
Yeah, he was, because, I mean, obviously Ron Howard played Opie on the Andy Griffith Show, right? Clint Howard played the son on Gentle Ben. Have you ever heard of Gentle Ben before?
I know Opie on the Andy Griffith Show, sure, but not Gentle Ben.
Yeah, he was the son. Like I think his dad was like a policeman or something like that, and or a game warden or something. And it was in Florida, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, actually, I better call that one up, eh? Yeah, he's not even in the known for. Yeah, I remember watching him back in the 60s on Gentle. They had a bear, and the bear was named Ben, right? And of course, the bear didn't eat them. Gentle Ben, 1967, 1969. Oh, so I guess he was in Star Trek before that. Dennis Weaver was his father. I don't know if you remember Dennis Weaver. He played McLeod. I don't know if you ever heard of McLeod.
No.
Draw a blank.
No. Draw a blank for me.
Yeah. Oh, and his dad, Rance Howard, was in the show too. Interesting. I guess that's how you corral your son, your 6-year-old son, right? yeah. What else? So, did you have any big pew pew? Well, obviously, pew pew was nothing but pew pew in this one, right? So.
Yeah. The Terminator 2 stuff was my. Pew, pew, pew. I guess you could choose the, you know, who really was the butcher of Jigal.
Yes, right. Yeah, that was an interesting twisty turn thing, right?
Yeah, having the Klingon ambassador, the diplomat, you know, painting himself as like, all right, people think I'm, you know, this butcher, and I think it was clear that he was. Right? Like, he didn't kill his own men. That extra part of the story is not true. It was Mbenga who did that under the green juice stuff, trying to assassinate the then general. But it kind of interesting how the ambassador took that as like, well, I'm going to hide behind that story to make it seem like, look, even I can reform, even the butcher of Jigal can change his tune and go towards peace.
Yeah, and this is a throwback to plotline from that point of view, because the Conscience of the King was an episode from the original series where there's an actor who I think Kirk, somebody recognizes him as this mass murderer guy who is hiding behind like he's playing a Shakespearean actor, right? And he's traveling. He's in a traveling show. And he apparently was like this mass murderer dude, Carradin. Yeah. So, the thing about it is like, and there's this mysterious scene. I was reading an article about how they filmed three different ways, I think the director was talking about this. They filmed three different ways. Like, you could see the knife fight at the end, or you could see the knife fight through the frosted glass, which is the one they went with, where it's you don't really know how he ends up dying, but. It's interesting that they examine the knife at the end, but they don't know that the knife was actually in Mbenga's possession the whole time, right?
Yeah,
he
premeditated, opened up, and brought the knife with him.
Right, but it had the DNA of the dead Klingon officers, which they thought that the bad dude, I've forgotten his name now, they thought he had killed his own men, but it turned out it wasn't him. He ran away from Mbenga, right? I don't know if it was really clear in the show or not.
Right.
When Mbenga went after him, he ran away. And that's why Mbenga is so mad at him. You know, that's one of the reasons why. But because he was actually the butcher of whatever you called it.
I think it's how they pronounce it.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting episode. You know, kind of like a bit like MASH, where, you know, like Christina lands and has to do this like triage stuff. And I mean, the bit about putting the, actually, and maybe that's where he learned the trick about the pattern buffer, because he puts his daughter in the pattern buffer, right?
Right, right.
To store her, because he puts the injured ensign into the pattern buffer till they can repair him. And then, did they have to, because they had to reset the thing at one point, right? And he kind of just slams down on the button, thinking, like, you know, it's more important to rescue the people coming in than to save this one particular life, right? That Christina had backed up in the buffer, right?
Yeah, indeed.
You know, that's sort of, what do they call it? The brutalness of war, you know, the term for it. I forget what they call it, but, you know, it's kind of like, or as Spock says at the end of Wrath of Khan again, the good of the many, or the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one, right?
Yeah, I think it definitely fits there for that sort of way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The other sort of thing I ended up quoting here was Mbenga's quote to the ensign, who's like, dude, I came here to be, you know, an explorer. I didn't come here to fight.
Yeah.
And Mbenga look at it as, we fight so the people we love can live in peace. And that seems to be how he's come to grips with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, that whole Hippocratic oath that they take and, you know, do no harm and all that kind of stuff. And yet they get thrown into this situation where they have no choice, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always thought it was funny, the sort of being a medical officer in a war, right? You know, the whole idea, or even a reporter, right? Like, you know, when the reporters go to war and they're meant to, like, not be shot at, not, you know, because they're just there as journalists or whatever. And there's a line between, you know, whether you'll carry a gun or not kind of thing. In fact, I did that movie with the Spider-Man dude, Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield played the conscientious objector. Yeah. Medical guy. He didn't even pick up the gun in training.
Was that a true story? I think it was a true story, right?
I think it was based on a true story, but I don't know. It certainly had that feel to it, from what I remember.
Almost like the comedy of Forrest Gump, where he runs back into the battle and rescues all the people, Captain Dan and all that kind of stuff, Lieutenant Dan. Yeah, it was an interesting episode, and kind of weird that it was right between the animated and the floor show, right? I'm calling this one.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird juxtaposition of episodes.
Yeah. Other than the Formula V or whatever we're calling it, did Compound V, did we have any other Easter eggs in this one?
I don't think so. I wonder if there's other stuff we missed that didn't get picked up on. For me, leading into my big question, I'm less familiar with how Mbenga... Sort of goes away and Dr. McCoy comes onto the Enterprise. I'm sure that there's probably regular crew assignments and et cetera. But given what they've shown us of Mbenga, like, are all of these secrets, like this murder, his kid in the transporter, is this why don't you retire and let some other guy come on board to be chief medical officer? You know, you're not in trouble, but like, we kind of need you to quietly go do something else instead of be on the flagship.
Well, initially in the cage is a different doctor. And I think in the first episode, there's a different doctor, which the first episode is called the cage, right? McCoy's in the first broadcast episode, The Man Trap. Yeah, I'm trying to remember when Mbenga comes in. I actually saw something about him recently, like a comparison between the current Mbenga and the original series Mbenga, right? I think he's only in one, maybe two episodes, Mbenga.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, he was like right there in the middle of the series. It wasn't Brooker Bradshaw was his name. I would have thought that in terms of like what he's known for, this would be the show he's known for. Right? Yeah. Oh, can't find it. Even in different strokes, Rockford Files, Good Times, Planet of the Apes. Oh, he's in a TV show. Why would they not list him as being in Star Trek? As a doctor who served aboard the USS Enterprise for 2 years, his background included an internship with a Vulcan ward. Apparently he helped save Spock's life. Find another good reference for him. Okay, it says in 2260, Mbenga stepped down as chief medical officer and served as a general physician. After Dr. McCoy became CMO, he continued to serve under Captain James T. Kirk, where, in the event of McCoy's absence, he served as ranking medical officer. In 2268, Mbenga treated Commander Spock for a serious gunshot wound that was inflicted on Neural. He had to slap Spock violently to bring him out of his Vulcan healing state. A Private Little War was the name of the episode. Oh yeah, that was the one with the tribe of sort of blonde-haired Aboriginal people, you know? Anything else about this episode you want to cover?
No, I don't think so. Kind of weird that it didn't really get its moment in the sun, because it came out the same week as the Lower Decks crossover. People thinking about the Rhapsody one just right after.
Yeah, I actually downloaded and watched it on the plane on the way home. Like, that's how weird it was in terms of timing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anywho, let's move on to Secret Invasion, the finale, the floor show. Yeah. Season 1, episode 6. Home, I think, was the name of the episode, right?
That's right. That's right. My elevator pitch was Super Skrullomania. It sounded like it's on pay-per-view, you know, coming this summer, Super Skrullomania.
Yeah. And Jonathan's got here, it's a tale told by an idiot with the full sound of Nick Fury signifying nothing, which is from Macbeth. Right.
It's a good choice.
Or you can really count on a U.S. president to do the right thing, especially when it comes to illegal aliens, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah. And I did like the fact that it wasn't really Nick Fury. I was kind of wondering, like, if, you know, he had somehow, if he was faking the sort of the coughing and the falling over when he was being exposed to the, the nuclear fallout or whatever. But I don't think radiation sickness happens that quickly, to be honest with you. Then we find out it's not really him. It's the other, Emily Clark's character. Right. I don't understand, like, why if, what's this, the bad dude's name?
Gravik.
Why if Gravik turns in, these, I guess we're doing the big bad right now, but if, or the big questions, but if he turned into like this big, you know, green, you know, Ninja Turtle like guy, right, with the big muscles and stuff, how come Emily Clark, other than the fact that it's Emily Clark, how come just her arm puffed up, right? That made no sense. I mean, other than there was one point there where she had, I think an ice arm, like, I guess they adopted all the sort of capabilities of the Avengers, right? By taking on this syrup or whatever, the DNA they collected, right?
Yeah, I don't know stylistically why they made that choice here to have a difference. Maybe to illustrate some difference in fighting style, but I can think of the Super Skrull in comics fighting, like, the Fantastic Four and having, you know, like a stretchy arm and, you know, a flaming arm and like a rock leg. And I don't remember what he did for an Invisible Woman. An invisible leg, which does not make sense. Maybe, like, I don't know, force field or something, like using all of the powers at once, a little bit closer to Emilia Clarke's depiction. So I'm not sure. And I'm sure there's probably a bunch of Easter eggs in that. I just picked out one of the Abomination, you know, kind of reptile fish-like sort of head, ears sort of thing. That's one of the ones I saw for sure.
Anyway, I'm just saying that Jonathan had here Super Skull Battle as his sort of big pew-pew as well, right? So for Easter egg, he's got here Avengers Assemble. Is that because they got all the Avengers together in this super serum?
Yeah, all the powers that come out, you know, the big green guy is probably Hulk. I mentioned the Abomination. You know, you got other powers in there that you got Captain Marvel's power. They use the little glowy fire cosmic, you know, plasma sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely saw the Captain Marvel part there. Yeah, I'm surprised how did they expose Rhodey? Because they didn't just, like, chop his finger off or whatever, right?
Yeah, this definitely could have helped from Deep Space Nine fighting the Dominion shapeshifter changeling sort of thing of, like, how about we poke your finger and see what color the blood becomes sort of thing.
Or shoot him in the leg or something like that just to make the reveal to the president, because the president's being an idiot, right? Like, not knowing who to point the gun at, right?
Yeah, I think it would have been a whole lot easier for everyone involved if the president hadn't, like, convinced that agent to give him a gun, because now you have to worry. Otherwise, it would have been easier to get to my pew-pew-pew, which is shooting fake Rhodey. But he even gets called out by the British agent. Her name is blanking on me. Olivia
Coleman.
Olivia Coleman's character. She's like, "Oh, you're not checking behind the doors. Oh, you really are a squirrel, aren't you?" Or something similar, right? Like, you're not really an agent, otherwise you wouldn't be so sloppy.
Tonya Falsworth, who she plays. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. In terms of quotes, I think early on I went with graphics, as I was kind of wondering why he had that particular face. And he says, "Do you recognize this face? This is the first human I killed because you told me to." So they closed that one for me.
How are we supposed to know that? Like, I guess that's the reveal here.
I think that's well, I know that's why I chose that one, because I was kind of wondering, like, I wonder why Gravik has, like, that face in particular, because so far you have, you know, oh, I'm pretending to be Rhodey, oh, I'm pretending to be, you know, this high government official. So I was like, well, I don't think he made up a face. Why did he choose that face?
Yeah, and then Jonathan Scott here. First, I'm going to kill you. Then I'm going to take a flamethrower to humanity. And just so I'm absolutely clear about this, Fury, you did this. Which in relation to that. So I was listening to another episode, another podcast. One of the co-workers posted it. And that particular podcast finds this show really bad. Right. And, I remember what it is. Yeah. So the whole thing was, I guess at the end of, I forget which movie it was, but, Nick Fury does say, I will go out into space and I'll find you a new home. Right. But then he doesn't. And gives up, and that's I guess why they're so mad at him, and they become his secret army kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Skrulls, because yeah. I mean, isn't that why he went to space, to look for a new home for them?
Yeah, at least that's what's being stated here. With the Nick Fury, it's kind of hard to tell if that was just a cover story, you know, to placate them while he's doing other things, kind of the game within the game within the game sort of thing that surrounds Nick Fury.
Mm-hmm. Priscilla, who's Priscilla? Is that his wife?
I think it was his wife, which she gives her real name, that she wants to go by her real name now.
Oh, I see, right.
Oh, yeah, it looks like Vara is probably the real name, based on Jonathan's copious notes.
Yeah, and she, I mean, it's kind of funny because, yeah, like this whole, you know, okay, I'm going to leave you, I'm going to go back to space, and like, you know, I was thinking like all along, well, why don't you just take her with you or whatever, and then she ends up showing up at the end, right? To go with him up into space, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of pretty vague in terms of, like, where he's going, like, or how he's getting there or whatever. Like, is it some sort of beam, or did they land a ship or something?
Yeah, it's like a white beam that seems to be some part of a ship. So I think where he's going, if your big question is what happens with Fury next, it's like, go watch The Marvels when it comes out later this year.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like,
it's not really a big question for me or anybody here, because like we know, even if we've forgotten the facts here. It's probably more for like you know, my parents, who are much more casual on this. Like, oh, what's gonna happen? It's like, oh, he's gonna come out in November, Mom, don't worry about it, he'll be back.
So what did you think about this series all in? I mean, like
I think for me the series is a bit uneven. I think it works better when it has the spy craft, and it's a lot more like the Winter Soldier movie, Captain America Winter. When he gets into the Skrull stuff as displaced, you know, migrant alien type stuff, I feel like it's a lot weaker there. So the superhero stuff, weirdly, is less... I wouldn't say less interesting. It's not as well presented, I think. Like the ideas were there, but the execution wasn't quite there.
Yeah, because I mean, that was what the other podcast was saying, that this was meant to be like Marvel's Andor, right? But it was nowhere near as good as Andor, which I'm sure Jonathan would agree to as well, right?
Yeah, I kind of wonder if it plays better without the superhero stuff. If you made it a bit more more grounded, does it fit better? I don't know. I mean, we ended up with Super Scrollomania, which is a common sort of YouTuber complaint of like, you know, they're like me, but evil me. That's the end, you know, that's the finale of the show. Would it have worked differently if it was actual Nick Fury versus Gravik and he finds a way to deal with the enemy?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Sunday Movies is the name of the podcast. So the other podcast that I'll have a link in the show notes, I guess, for this. People can sit back and enjoy it. Yeah, I find, I mean, I don't know. I think in terms of all the stuff that we've seen for Marvel. This is one of the weaker ones. I thought, you know, to be honest with you, I thought, what was the Captain America one we just saw with the fake Captain America?
Oh, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier with
That one
with U.S. agent or T.S. agent, as I like to call him on this show.
Yeah, T.S. agent. Yeah, it. I mean, that was. I didn't super enjoy that series, but that was better than this. Let's put it that way. Right? In a lot of ways, right? So.
I'd agree, and I think it's because it's a little bit more grounded, right? Like, yeah, there's some like superhero-ish kind of thing, but it's like, you know, performance enhancing drugs superhero. It's not all these superpowers thrown together sort of thing. So
yeah, and I guess we're getting spoiled by things like The Boys, right, which is really well written, and The Boys and Watchmen are kind of like, they're kind of two different takes on the same kind of groups of super people, right? More people with powers, I guess, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I throw Invincible in there as well. It's like,
oh yeah, that's another good one. Yeah,
what would happen if people really had these powers and just let humanity go awry?
Or even like that. What was the one with Will Ferrell, or not Will Smith, and Charlize Theron?
Hancock.
Hancock. That was another one which was kind of cool, that this dude has all these powers and he's kind of like, you know, they almost want to put. Or what was it, the Gary Sinise one where they wanted to put, was that Mystery Men, where they wanted to put like sponsors on his uniform? Yeah, that was Mystery Men, where he had the almost like, you know, hockey players or soccer players with all the sponsorships on his jersey, right? Sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's move to our watch list then, I guess. Jonathan's got Dungeons and Dragons on here. I haven't watched it yet. Have you watched that one yet?
Yeah. I believe was on Paramount Plus, so I'm not sure where you all got it from, but I don't know what Jonathan's take is, but my take was going into it thinking, you know, I should say going way back, going into the trailer of the movie thinking this is going to be terrible, just like the other Dungeons and Dragons movie, being surprised to see that the critics and the fans enjoyed it on Rotten Tomatoes, and then watching it and enjoying it myself, even though I'm not a player of Dungeons & Dragons. I've been influenced by it, because just like Lord of the Rings, it's so influential in other mainstream fantasy, high fantasy media. So it certainly fit my bill in terms of like what I was looking for. And given its success, I'm going to guess that it's done pretty well here for Jonathan as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I should have taken an opportunity to ask my nephew, who actually plays Dungeons and Dragons regularly, what he thought about this. That would have been an interesting perspective. It looks like it's on Netflix for us. Is it called Honor Amongst Thieves? Is that the one? Or no,
Honor Amongst Thieves is the new Dungeons and Dragons movie, not the
it's on the
late Netflix 90s one.
The Netflix. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. But and then what have you got for your pick here?
Finally got around to watching the Super Mario Brothers movie. I believe it is streaming on Peacock, but in this case, I had enough digital credits with Amazon that I got it for like a couple bucks rental. So I watched it via Amazon. It's a breezy hour and a half movie. I'm not going to call it a brilliant movie. It has a lot of member berries strewn about, which is... I don't know if they're the originators of this, but the Red Letter Media folks always like to critique things. It's like saying, like, do you remember this thing? It's got a lot of nostalgia factor stuff thrown into what's really a very basic paper-thin plot that, you know, analyzing, I'm like, I feel like in this hour and a half, you could have taken the same movie, removed a bunch of characters, kept it a lot more simple, less flashy and glossy, and it probably fits better as a movie. But I can see why Nintendo, given the horrific thing that happened to them the last time with the Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo, Super Mario Bros. Movie, why they said, you know what, we better just like, you know, just go right down the middle here. Just try not to go anything too crazy and artistic. Like, let's just hit the fan service that people want. So it's a real solid fan service movie. I don't think it's that great of a movie as a movie, but as somebody who enjoyed, you know, partaking in the member berries, I'm like, yeah, I was pretty satisfied. It's a good popcorn movie, as we've said on this show, of like some days you just want to be in a nice cold theater, get your soda, get your popcorn, just forget your worries and just watch cool stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at Just Watch here. It looks like it's available for rent or buy on Apple TV or YouTube or Amazon and our Cineplex app, which is our movie theater app. But and some Flix Fling or something like that, I guess it's available for rent as well for a dollar less. So I don't know what that is, but that's how you can watch Super Mario Brothers. I do think it's coming soon to something here. I did see something about it on one of our streaming services. I'm not sure what's happening with that. And then for my pick, mine is not a sci-fi related one, but it was really interesting. I watched Full Circle after watching listening to Steven Soderbergh on Smartless. He was talking about his show called Full Circle, which is kind of interesting. It's about a kidnapping that goes wrong, and turns out there's lots of interconnecting. All the characters in the show, they're all sort of interconnected with each other. They're all coming from different parts of life. It comes back down to in your surprise to find, the twists and turns. Again, it's one of these things I wonder if Jonathan watched it and if he could figure it out, unravel it before it reveals itself, right? But one interesting thing, though, is Jack Quaid's dad, Dennis Quaid, is in it as a sort of a famous chef with a ponytail and all that kind of stuff. And these heavy glasses on. And it was funny because I kind of looked at him and I'm thinking, who is that actor? Like, I couldn't place him. Generally speaking, I can, Dennis Quaid, I've seen him in hundreds of movies, right? I had to actually hit the IMDb app to see who he was. Interesting, it's got Timothy Oliphant and Claire Danes in it. We were just talking about Timothy Oliphant in Justified, and also he was also in The Mandalorian there for a while. A really interesting actor. He's got that sort of Chris Pine swagger, but like I think Chris Pine wants to be Timothy Oliphant, you know what I mean? So he's a really interesting character in this one. And the funny thing is, like, the son, their son gets kidnapped, and they're sort of a well-to-do family, so obviously the son is being targeted because he keeps losing his phone, he loses his running shoes, he loses his backpack. And you and I both being IT people, we kind of sort of see that as, something that, something's coming, because it's not just this kid's incompetent and can't lose his phone. So, and they make the crime of all crimes, right? They won't let him put a password on his phone because they're afraid he's going to lose it again. Right. So talk about the absolute wrong thing to do. Right. Cause then of course, the kidnappers start sending messages back to the parents, right, using his phone. But anyway, yeah. And I'm just scratching the surface. That happens like within the first, half hour of the show. It's probably, I think it's six episodes long, maybe. So yeah, it's interesting because, Soderbergh's obviously a movie director, right? And him doing a TV show was kind of a, not normal thing, right? So, but it plays like a movie. Very easy to sit there and binge it, right? I think I watched it like continuously until it was done in one evening. It
looks like it's got quite the cast, so.
Yeah.
Interesting. It appears to be on Max here in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on Crave for us. Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. My name is Dimitra, TIMMITRA. And I am on the Twitter machine, the Mastodon machine, the Threads machine, Blue Sky, although I really haven't spent much time over there. All that kind of stuff. But so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag #AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Mastodon?
I haven't. I haven't done Mastodon. I haven't done Blue Sky. I'm waiting to see what happens as the pieces continue to fall off of Twitter, now X.
X Twitter.
It's so annoying because it's really hard to Google now.
Yeah. So I guess you didn't see the thing that Keen posted in comparison between Strange New Worlds and Strange New Worlds Lower Deck. He posted an animated video here.
Comparison. I didn't get a chance to look at that. No.
Do you want to take a look at it now? We'll have a quick comment on it.
Okay. One sec. Actually, let me see about.
Oh, it's both of them right at the same time.
Yeah. That's what I figured it probably was.
The only difference is the little guy hanging on the nacelle, right? But otherwise, shot for shot, it's almost identical. A couple of angles are slightly different, but...
Yeah, a couple angles feel like they're different to emphasize the Lower Deck stuff. Like, it would be really hard to see the nacelle sucker if it was as far out as the Strange New Worlds one is. So it's a little closer for that reason.
So yeah, you heard I'm off to Apple, eh?
Yeah. Do we need to go off for this one, or...
No, I'll just cut it.
Since you're the editor,
well, no, it's up to you. I'm paying my own way. I mean, like, I'm gonna have to do it. Like, I applied for the developer kit, and I applied for, and then the other day it came out this thing, you know, you can go to the lab, and I thought, well, what the hell? Let's just see what happens, right? And I have enough air mile points that I can, you know, pay for the flight for myself and Carol to go down to San Francisco for the weekend. I picked a Friday so that I'd be close enough to the weekend to go and, you know, spend a couple of days in San Francisco, right? Go visit Mark, you know, go visit, have a burrito with Greg. Yeah. So, and get to go to I haven't been to the developer center at Apple. So, and when I was in 2017, when I was in California, the Apple Park wasn't even finished yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was still like a mud pit, and they were still
constructing, you
know. I mean, there was actually a hotel pretty near. Maybe I should get my room there, but there was a hotel that our TD, I went with TD, right, and I stayed in a hotel away from somewhere in San Jose, and they stayed in a hotel across the street from Apple Park, kind of thing, right? So they could see the building from their hotel room. Maybe that's what I'll do. I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to do like an Airbnb or whatever, but I figure I'll fly into San Jose, do the Apple visit, and then go up, then we'll drive up or transport up to San Francisco and spend the day there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, Carol and I usually do like transit. We do all the buses and cable cars and stuff like that. Right. Go check out the art gallery and, a couple of parks that she likes there. And there's a couple of fabric stores that she wants to go visit. Hopefully they're still there. Yeah, I like San Francisco. It's one of my favorite towns. Oh, and there's a breakfast. You can go to the Embarcadero for a really nice sort of farmer's market breakfast. And if they have, like, you know, all the sort of Tex-Mex stuff that they make right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. I can't think of the names of them right now, but, you know, it's like eggs with salsa and stuff like that. sorry to sound insensitive, but that's just the way it is.
No, I get it.
Apple Park. It's interesting, Apple Park is actually on the map I was looking at today.
It's probably significant enough and large enough physically to warrant being a landmark.
Well, I mean, they do that with, like the Rogers Center's on here and whatever. Oh, yeah, the Hilton Garden Inn, that's maybe where my people stayed. Look at the rate. Oh, ratings, that's not what I'm on. How do you book a room there? Website, I guess. Yeah, I got to figure out the whole logistics and all that kind of stuff. But
right,
yeah. But I've saved up all my air miles points to afford a trip down there. I mean, it's not too expensive. I mean, fly down and get a hotel room and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's more expensive because it's right by Apple.
Yeah, they probably have a lot of people coming in and out. So
yeah,
if you want to make it as a convenient sort of thing, you got to pay a bit of a premium.
Hmm. Right.
If you don't want to pay it, next person up will. I think that's the, you know, it's like being close to like Disneyland or Disney World or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Looks like a $157. That's not a bad price. Honors discount. What's an honors discount? Comes with breakfast. Although I won't need breakfast. Huh. Cool. All right. don't know what else is going on with you. How was your conference thing? Your hackathon?
The event went well, you know.
Yeah.
Helped people out with their stuff, and it seemed like the credit union attendees seemed to all enjoy it and have fun. So it was good. It was good to get out there and see people.
Cool.
It's a little weird for me because I wasn't a participant. It was subject matter expert to help people if they get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. You get any interesting apps made up or?
Yeah. Stuff that I think will make sense in the credit union space, helping people with their financial lives and saving and stuff. So it's one of those things where you wouldn't necessarily expect a like $1 billion business to come out of it, but the cool thing about the hackathon concept is it could. Just really depends on people's imaginations and what they're able to finish.
Cool. All right. Well, I gotta go. I have another episode of More Than Just Code coming out. One more interview of one of the speakers from the conference, which is happening next week, right?
Oh, okay, cool. I'll leave you to that.
Yeah. And we should do an episode one of these days with you and Mark, right?
Yeah. When is your trip? Because maybe it'll make sense to, like, you can't 25th. Talk specifically about, I'm sure, but the surrounding experience might be okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like the sort of the rules of the game are like, don't wear any like branded T-shirts that give away who you work for and that kind of stuff. And it's very similar to the workshop I went to, where you're in a room, you're not supposed to fraternize with the other people.
Put some horse blinders on you so you can't see who else is there.
We were I forget who I think it was IBM was in the other room. Like we had the boardroom and we were like all TD people were there. And there was another boardroom, and you kind of like saw them when you went to the bathroom or you went and had lunch or whatever. They would sort of be in the same space, and nobody had like any sort of insignia on them to say who they were, and we weren't supposed to tell. And we just had like Tim on my badge kind of thing. But yeah, so and it's like I think that no photos, no videos, that kind of stuff is what they say in the welcome, the information letter sort of thing, right? I'm sure there'll probably be like an NDA and all that kind of stuff, sign and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, it's interesting to tell me to bring my prescription for my glasses with me.
Oh, they're probably going to give you that experience of what it's like having Zeiss lens.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one thing that, that's the one thing that I'm not really sure about. Like, cause I mean, it's going to be an expensive device. So are they going to toss in the lenses for people or?
One would hope, otherwise they've got a PR thing of like Apple discriminating against people with disabilities.
Yeah. Well, did we talk about that 37 seconds or whatever it was on More Than Just Code? Like, there's a famous video, I think when the iPhone 4 came out, they spent, when VoiceOver first launched, right? They spent, it was like 37 seconds was how long they talked about the feature being around. I think it's one of the ones where, I think Steve Jobs is sick, so Phil Schiller was the MC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they only talked, like, they rolled out VoiceOver. Oh, yeah, we got this new feature called VoiceOver. And, because before that came out, if you were visually impaired or whatever, you couldn't use an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So, similar, like, that similar possible potential fiasco that way, right? With the Vision Pro. We have to see.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see. I'm dying to see the thing too. So and decide it'll be the will I buy one, won't I buy one moment, right? because it's like the closest thing to being able to go to the store and try one on, right?
Yeah, and with your own apps and stuff, so you'll get a chance.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I've built a couple of apps in the simulator, and it's like I'm Device Tracker runs on it, right? And Device Tracker is like riddled with Objective-C, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's mostly like, yeah, I would say it's probably 95% Objective-C, right? Yeah. So, and it runs fine from what I can tell. Actually, I'm not going to say too much, but yeah. Yeah, I was surprised when I just was able to build it and it kind of ran and played around with it a bit. So, it's interesting. Like, have you tried the simulator yet?
No, I actually have not.
It puts you in a living room with like a television on the wall and a coffee table in front of you, and you're sitting on a couch and there's like a love seat beside you, and you know, you basically, you launch your app and it kind of like the, there's like a, I guess like a, for lack of a better word, a dock of circles that float in front of the screen in front of you. Mm-hmm. And then like, so like if you click on the Safari circle, it opens up a browser and just kind of floats. And as soon as you tap on anywhere that like you would enter text, this sort of virtual keyboard kind of sort of comes up on a sort of angle in front of you, and you can, you know, you use your mouse or your cursor or whatever, or your keypad to type, and it, you know, depresses the keys as if you're doing it with your fingers. Right. And then you've got, there's like 3D common 3D tools, in the lower right hand corner. Like there's like a yaw and a pitch, you know, like you can move left and right and up and down, and you can also rotate the room. Right. Mm. And when you rotate the room, the app rotates with the room, like once you've opened it. So, and you can almost rotate, you can't really see behind your app because it kind of just goes clear when you get behind it. But it's just like you're in a VR space, right? Like,
yeah,
from that point of view, right? So it'll be different when you've got the gear on your head, right?
Yeah, I think, I'm sure it'll feel way different. The simulator can only do so much that I imagine it'll be interesting to see how you feel about things once you can actually get the AR experience from that.
Well, I got to try it. We had an event, a casino night event, in Chicago, and they had an Oculus there. So I got to try the Oculus set. I didn't want to play a game, but I said, hey, like, put me in like the Grand Canyon or something like that, right? So kind of like, you know, you're in the space and you turn around and you're looking, look up, look down. That's sort of the Google Cardboard experience that I'm used to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So other people were playing like, what's that Fruit Ninja thing? Is that what it's called? The game where you have to slice the fruit?
That's the one that was like on iPad and stuff that they make
Fruit Ninja.
Yeah,
so they have a similar one for the Oculus where you kind of swipe at it and as the fruit come flying at you. You know, but it's that same sort of thing where you got to move all the furniture out of the way, right? Kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You have to have somebody watching you so you don't, like, you know, walk into a wall or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm curious about the whole being able to see through, you know, with the external cameras as well, right?
Yeah. And I think seeing other people, so you can see the little eyes stuff. I'm kind of curious what that's like in real life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I think that's just weird. Be honest with you. I don't know why they need to do that, but you know, I guess it's for the other people hanging around you, I guess, right?
So they can tell if you're immersed or if you can actually see them, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Are you sleeping in there? Exactly. All right. Well, I guess that's it. Talk to you next time.
Until next time.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Where is the off button?
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.